The American Ghost Society's 12th Annual Haunted American Conference will be held June 20th and 21st in Decatur, Illinois.
Hosted by Troy Taylor at the Haunt at Lincoln Theater.
Speakers include Patrick Byrne, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and Keith Age.
Also, Linda Adams, Luke Kalbarski, Dale Kazmarek, Stephen LeChance, and psychic Ken Byrne.
Don't miss this two-day event with special investigations and tours sold on a first-come, first-served basis.
To register, guys, go to www.prairieghost.com/conference.html or just call 1-888-446-7859.
Broadcasting live from this event will be the Ghostly Talk Radio crew and Nathan S. and Sean B. from the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show.
Witness a special live performance on the Lincoln stage from Spectrum Men, the Atlanta horror punk band made up of real-life ghost hunters.
Admission remains the same as 1997, $50 per person.
It's the 12th Annual Haunted America Conference in Decatur, Illinois with Troy Taylor. Register now.
Questing for the mystery of life can get old. It's like looking for a break in a code. Deduce it, reduce it, dissolve it. Just try to resolve it. The best you can get is a mercurial hold. It's like plucking all the petals off a rose to find the mystery of all the beauty it holds. One by one they are falling. Still no secret is calling. Just the pieces of a beautiful rose. It's gone now, you know. You can't make it not so. You can put it back together again. But what life it did hold is no longer within. Just the remnants and the pieces of the whole. Like moving through the labyrinth snare, making passage by passage with care. When you're sure that you've beat it, you find you're defeated. Back in the middle of the labyrinth snare. It's gone now, you know. You can't make it not so. You can put it back together again. But what life it did hold is no longer within. Just the remnants and the pieces of the whole. Anything is in its heart, all the living and the giving it imparts. Dissected, one-sided, divided, it just can't be decided. If the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, even though you can't see it, you know you believe it. The mystery of life is the whole. Accept it at base. Keep the pieces in place. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Just listen to the hum of our hearts.
Hey, Scott O. I just want to thank you for this sweet Ghostly Talk t-shirt, man. When I put it on, women just start coming at me from all directions. Well, no problem, dude.
Oh, yeah, and check this out. I had this rash on my chest for like 3 months, right? The first time I wore this Go See Talk t-shirt for the day, I took it off before bed and the rash was gone.
Really?
Yeah, dude. I also worked at a job interview I had last week, and not only did I get the job, but the boss liked it so much, he made me his partner.
Huh?
Yeah, and I'm now a millionaire because of your Ghostly Talk t-shirts.
Well, you know, we not only have new t-shirts for 2007, but Ghostly Talk also has a brand new line of bumper stickers and 1 1/4-inch buttons.
You're kidding!
No, sir. You can check them out and also find out how to order them at ghostlytalk.com.
I must go and order all of them now!
Whoa, hold on. Save some for the rest of the listeners. As you can see, Ghostly Talk swag is going fast, so head on over to ghostlytalk.com and check it out. T-shirts, bumper stickers, and 1 1/4-inch buttons, all for a very cheap price. Order yours today.
You're listening to Ghostly Talk.
The chat room is up.
Yes, it is.
We worked the bugs out. Thank you to Nathan.
Yes.
From the Ghost Band and Demon Hunter Show and Jeff from Omni Sound for helping us out, getting that thing together.
One quick thing to mention.
Yeah.
The Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show will also be in Decatur. Done.
Oh, dude, I totally looked over
I know. I just got it from Nathan.
I am so sorry, Nathan. You know, God forbid I don't mention your name, the name of your show, 15 times. No, I'm really sorry. I totally blew through.
I just wanted to mention it so everyone knows.
I got nothing but love for you guys. I totally screwed that one up. We got to move on, though. Kenneth Deal is a demonologist of the Catholic faith, a spiritual warfare counselor, and often Catholic faith advisor, catechism. He has over 28 years of research and experience on the topics, with his first experience occurring when he was about 7 years old. His website is www.catholicdemonologist.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome our very good friend, I have to say, a good friend of ours. We've known him for a long while now, Mr. Kenneth Deal. Kenneth, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
How are you doing? First thing I have to mention to you is thank you for being so flexible and coming on the show at such a late, like about an hour and a half ago, 2 hours ago. That's when we had this thing confirmed. So thank you so much, Ken.
You're welcome. No problem.
Now, everything happens for a reason, right? And we kind of talked about that earlier when we were on the phone, Ken. And I'm like, because you're like, yeah, you know, we never really have had a jam session before, you know, with us kind of talking and stuff.
That's true, yeah.
Especially on Ghostly Talk. So I'm like, wow, you know, well, maybe things happen for a reason here, and that's why we're here right now, and we're going to be talking about the things we're going to talk about. So very happy to have you here. Doug, are you there?
I am here, and I am absolutely geeked because I can't wait to get into some stuff because... for example, one of those reasons might be one of the things that we wanted to talk about, and then it just so happens that
we've been kind of sticking with us all night.
We got a phone call. Yeah, we got a phone call from the Ghost Man Sean saying that they're going to tear down the Central State Hospital in Indiana. And it was Indianapolis.
Is that in the same asylum?
It used to be the mental asylum. They're tearing it down. Yeah. And we were talking a couple times about, you know, renovations and construction and things like that. And one of the things that's on the list of things that we can talk about, you know, that you're willing to talk about is renovations and construction and deconstruction and all that stuff and what it does, what the physical place, changes to the physical place can do. And I thought, wow, now this is a thread that cannot be ignored. It can't be ignored. This is just happening. People are talking about this all of a sudden. Evidently, there's a reason that you were going to be on the show, and I'm hoping that might be
this
it.
This may be the reason. It's kind of something that's sticking with us right now.
It's not going away.
Yeah, so more or less the question is towards you, Kenneth. And we don't really like asking questions. We're going to have fun here, so don't get nervous. We're not going to be crying.
That's okay.
But why do
I'll
some...
Fly.
Yeah, well, that's how we do it here. Mm-hmm. Why do some hauntings occur after renovate... Well, let's really get to the brass tacks here on this, though. You know...
renovations, yeah, sometimes when you knock a wall down, you do this, whatever, in a house, you know, sometimes people say they experience paranormal activity. Now, there are situations also, though, Ken, I'm wondering what you think about this, is like this situation. They're going to bulldoze this historic building down and probably build a WM on top of that or some condos or whatever it may be. Is that kind of in the same ballpark as far as these experiences?
Well, I'll lean towards the why on the more evil spirit side, but I think the other reasons are probably more obvious to the people, you know, when you have some earthbound spirits attachments. Maybe someone that just loved working with those patients, you know, the caring side. I mean, you see people work with the handicap just as much as, you know, people that have handicaps on other levels, even if it's just, you know, that they're insane.
Yeah.
But on the evil spirit / demonic side, the reason why, you know, a haunting might start up that has sort of a malicious nature, and it's not because, I don't want my house redone, you know. something besides that is, one of the things is if you had your house blessed, that when you do renovations, you have to have it re-blessed.
Oh.
You're known by most priests that it's sort of like it needs to be rechristened, you know, like reset. It's sort of like, you know, some people might even say it's like feng shui or something, but that's one thing. So if you figure if the blessing is undone, suddenly it's sort of like letting out the spirits that have been bound by previous blessings or exorcism or whatever. Well, you know, it could be something like that. That's possible.
Mm-hmm.
You also get some uncovering of dark places. Sometimes you have dark spaces with secrets. You find that, you know, demonic spirits like to cling to dark places and all that, and for whatever reason, you know, like uncovering a closet and opening into a second room, a walk-in closet or something like that,
mm-hmm.
might be related to this. Letting in some light is, you know, could be like kicking the mean dog's fence, you know, because they don't like light.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have sometimes people that actually go in to do the construction themselves have some sort of dark attachment and actually may bring something in with them. You know,
oh.
That could be any variety of things.
So yeah, there's all these variables you have to take into account.
Yeah, I know the variables. Look at the long math equation for that.
Yeah.
and that's why you have to have a checklist that you can go over a lot of these things and you might find one or two or more.
Mm.
And it's like researching history for a place, and sometimes you're like, why is it haunted? And you find all this stuff. It used to be an Indian burial ground. It's 200 years old, and you come up with all this stuff, and no one reason comes up with the definitive answer why, but all of them could be part of the reason. Instead of just one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how it is with this, too.
Well, the first time I ever heard of this was I was a teenager,
mm-hmm.
and so this was years and years and years ago.
1800 and froze to death.
Pretty much, yeah. And there were some people who had moved to Romeo, Michigan. Romeo's an old and very interesting community, rather quiet actually. But you know, they have antique shops and it's
Kid
really
Rock's in there, yo.
Yeah, there you go. And so Romeo, Michigan.
Give it the credit it deserves, Doug.
And there was one of the old houses, you know, because it's a lot of very old houses. And one of the old houses that, you know, people would buy it and then they'd want to, you know, do something up in the attic. They'd want to fix up the attic for, you know, a showroom or fix up, you know, it's usable space. It's just not,
uh-huh.
it's just going to waste.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And, so they'd hire a construction crew who'd go up there and then never come back.
Yeah.
You know, they'd leave that day or
yeah.
at lunchtime and never come back. And then they're like, you didn't finish. Yeah, yeah, we're not doing your attic. okay.
There's like a case where they were renovating the attic and uncovered some photos and stuff. There's a haunting episode related to this. This one's actually a separate one. And the photos that came to, you know, be revealed had some revealing evidence on there against somebody who had been deceased.
Ooh.
That was thought of as a well-known, well-respected individual or something in the local government and so on, and it revealed a dark side to them. And then the activity began after that. And I think it goes along with that point that I made that you uncover a secret. You know,
that
going in the
be.
Attic and stuff, it can go along with that idea that the dark space is in the attic or something, and suddenly going up there to change it. But, you know, we're not going to let go of that, like I said, the crappy old farm guy doesn't want his house modernized, you know.
Well, sure. This is an interesting idea, though, if we can run with this for a second. This idea of uncovering a secret, and I think all of us talking on this show right now.
Bonnie uncovers all my secrets.
Well, no, there's... You know, I think it goes without saying the power that a secret has, as far as someone, you know, and if I look at you guys, I'm not going, yeah, do you have a secret? No,
what
I'm
is
just,
your secret?
No, yeah. but it's like, you know, these are things that, yeah, some people have things that they keep private that, yeah, it's like a complete, complete antithesis, I guess, of what their personality is in their everyday life, their working life, their family life, whatever it may be. And they have this, I don't even want to call it dark side. Maybe just something that they don't, they're embarrassed of.
I'm secretly nice.
Well, yeah.
That's a very well hidden secret.
I think we just illustrated a good example right there. But I mean, it's a very powerful thing though, because we know that even in like fleshy life here, right? When we're these heavy beings with water all over us and stuff, we, in us, whatever. Anyway, so, but when we have a secret revealed that we don't want to have, shut up, Doug. Do it to me. But when we have in real life, we have a secret that's revealed. Some people tend to get very, very, very upset about.
Right, and it really doesn't matter at that point whether you're a, you know, a local politician or a national politician or you know somebody who.
Those are the most fun though.
Those are the most fun to make fun of. Yeah. Yeah, but no, I mean it's what it means to you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Changeling, that movie with George C. Scott.
Oh, great movie.
About, that was a dark secret, and then you had one going way back to, you know, it's a something that Abbott and Costello, of all things. Do you remember that thing where the Costello and a gal were believed to be traitors? They were not traitors, and their ghosts kind of hung around until they tried to help the people, you know, doing seances, uncover a letter from George Washington, commended him for their work and stuff. I mean, it's so funny that all these answers have been here in the old days of a lot of stuff. It's just that we forgot about it. Well, you know, I mean, that it was so common that they put in a movie like that.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Wow.
But what happens when the secret's revealed, though, with, you know, with a person who is not here anymore, but they may still be around?
Oh, you know what happens a lot, and here we go. Some of these so-called residual hauntings, which I often believe is a conscious spirit, even though it doesn't interact with our world or with us, that when a secret's been uncovered, they stop doing their rounds, you know, nightly or whatever their activity level was, daily or weekly. And that's happened before. So you get a good thing coming sometimes if you don't want the spirit to be around anymore when you accidentally uncover something and then it suddenly stops. So it has a reverse effect, too, depending, I guess.
So it can go both ways. Yeah, it can go both ways. My thing, just my thought process on that is, you know, obviously one way, whereas if you do reveal a secret about someone after they've passed away, like you've gone, like you said, Ken, you go into the attic and you find these pictures of this person, like God knows doing what, it brings out a lot of emotions in that person, whether they're alive or dead, I think. Obviously, anger, embarrassment, and these are not positive things in a lot of situations. So, and those are strong emotions. It just kind of goes back to the root of, you know, paranormal activity in general, I think. You know, strong emotions imprinting on an environment, and here we go, we have activity. Not nearly that simple, but, you know, as far as a high level, that's where it's at. It just seems like it kind of ties in with that when you release, or when you discover a secret about someone like that after they've passed away. That's just how I see it. I mean, am I remotely on target at all, Ken?
I agree. Yeah, especially when you're talking about a human ghost, you know, on some level. I mean, a human non-malevolent, that kind of thing, you know, lurking around, that kind of thing. You know, we had that Children of the Grace thing appear twice on there, and I did the research and introduced them to the castle, which is in town here.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some notions that, you know, that's kind of like waking up the dead, so to speak, by bringing out some of the dark past of that place with the child abuse. And I went and did research and found that Knights of the Pythias were kind of connected to the Freemasons, and that they, in their book, it says you must be a white male. So we know the Freemasons had ties with the Ku Klux Klan. They were on the wrong side of the Civil War, wrong side of civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're very racist.
Uh-huh.
In their past and so on. And so, you know, when we started hearing some of these things about child abuse and stuff on there, and that stuff coming out to the forefront, that you might create some angry spirits, as, you know, you heard some responses in the movie, and that was my notion
mm-hmm.
as far as that place was going. Even though I got sick before I even got a chance to be interview for that. I ended up with a stomach flu. I'm not one of those guys like, oh, I'm an old guy, too. Remember that, Scott, you know, Doug. And I go on there, and I'm up there for 3 days with you over there, over the Arkansas thing, hanging out with the boys. And
yeah.
then I come back to Pythia and, you know, ready to do my stuff all day, and I just get sick in the worst way from being up three nights without hardly any sleep.
Oh, I know that feeling. I've done it several times. Yeah, I know. I know.
Yeah.
But that's a good example, though. I mean, like you just said, I mean, obviously, and I have family that's in the Masonic Order, so I know.
Yeah.
They have a front. Let's be blunt. They have a front. And if you negate that front, they get very angry. I know this for a fact.
It's a dark past. It doesn't say anything about what they're doing now, but,
yeah.
you know, they've got dark past and a lot of things. So.
But that's, yeah, this kind of... I need help, Doug.
Oh,
my brain.
Okay. What are we talking about?
Oh, what are you doing?
Oh, I was reading some of the things that we're going to talk about. But
oh, really? Were you?
Well, here's the thing. While you were talking to Ken,
yeah.
I glanced at his thing, and one of the things on there is the significance of 3 a.m. And I know this is not even a segue or anything like
yeah.
that.
That's
we were just
brutal.
Talking about this last night.
Were you?
We were talking about this because...
Well, Ken, do you mind if we... Can we switch gears like that? Is that cool?
Here's
the
thing.
Sure. We talked right. that one pretty good.
Last night, yeah. Ken, we were at the
Mansfield,
Ohio State Reformatory in Mansfield, Ohio, and... we were there, and it was, at first it became midnight, obviously, and we talked about how spooky that was, and then it started to become 3 a.m., and, because we were down in the main room talking, because I had to change batteries, laptop batteries, and we're all talking, and quarter to three, or,
mm-hmm.
or half an hour to three, or, you know, it's almost 3 o'clock, and somebody had come down and said, ooh, it's almost the... bewitching hour or something, and I'm like, oh, I wonder what time that is, and it turns out she's talking about,
I'm around.
Yeah, she was talking about 3 a.m. and somebody had said, oh, did you know the reason that 3 a.m. is so creepy, and I'm like, no, what's up, and you know, gave an explanation. And the thing is about the 3 a.m. thing is, I did know one of the things that I was saying. Once the lady had come down about the 3 a.m. thing, or about the bewitching hour thing, was I said, well, I do know that I believe I've, because I've been to Mansfield, Ohio, to the Ohio State Reformatory over and over and over again, like a dozen or more times, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I do know that a lot of the publicans, they, you know, they start at 8 p.m., and a lot of the people who go are not really overly into ghost hunting. They just, you know, they watch TV, or they're interested in the history, or they, you know, it's just something to do. And so they end up leaving shortly after the pizza party, which is at 10:30. So about midnight, 1 a.m., the parking lot empties out, right? Well, not last night, because we had ghost hunters. We had real ghost hunters. I mean, these were people who were serious. They had equipment. They, you know, the Buckeye State Paranormal folks.
Steely-eyed, come hither, look in their eyes at all
exactly. time. Exactly. They organized it. They were
yeah, they were great. Awesome.
They wanted to be there all night, and they were. And so the parking lot was not clearing out very well.
No.
And because everybody was still there. And so the 3 a.m. came and went with all these people here. But I did hear over the years, and I've been there for many years, that the best time to be ghost hunting at Mansfield is between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. in that range.
Yeah,
and
we've heard that for years.
3 a.m. is right there. So I expressed this a couple times, and we talked about the 3. So we talked for a good 20-25 minutes about the 3 a.m. thing. And then this pops up on your list of things. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah.
So that's where my mind was while you were talking about secret orders and things like that.
Let's see, Mansfield, was that a prison?
Yes.
Was a prison, yes.
Okay. Well, that kind of makes sense to me. I can give a breakdown on it. The old notion is, in part true. What I mean by in part true, there's more than one reason for it. And that's the one that the Warrens used to say all the way back in there. Might have been in the original Amityville book when they were quoted in there. And that's the mockery of the Trinity. That's as far as dark spirits go. Now, for metaphysical in between this world and the next world, there seems to be a thinner veil between this world and a negative world, not like heaven, you know, or positive spirits, or this world and the next period. It seems to be between this world and a demonic or a darker world. and they seem to have gain power at, you know, hour. We call it the hour of power, the demonic hour, the witching hour. There's a lot of nicknames for it. The only one I've ever heard on that was bedtime. That's a new one. I think there's come up with a coin phrase or something. But this dark, and the other thing is, if someone says, you know, the phase of the sun, and I'm not sure if it's the darkest at 3, but, you know, you got to realize the sun is pretty far on the other side of the planet, even at 3 a.m., and even smaller significant levels of light, the darker spirits, you know, demons, have issues with ultraviolet light that we can't see. That's even here when it's 11 o'clock at night, and because the sun hasn't really, you know, disappeared onto the other side of the globe so much. You know, just because we can't see it and it looks dark to us, there's still some traces of it. And so that's another thing right there, too. And, you know, here at the insane asylum, you know, have activity peaks or something on, you know, darker aspects around 3. So somehow or another, they know what time it is like they do when the lunar eclipse. Or was it the full moon? And then, you know, they, hence the nickname lunatics, remember? Yeah.
Yeah,
and so, and the other thing is there's a theology that 3 p.m. is a positive time, and, you know, Jesus died on the cross and ascended into heaven, and even the assumption is the Catholics, I guess the Orthodox.
Well, that's when we should be ascending out of work, too, so that is a very positive time of the day.
Yeah, that's right. So we have a thinner between heaven and earth at the 3 p.m. time, so just the complete opposite. And you'll notice that the dark, positive, negative stuff can place can on a complete opposite scale on that. And then the number 3 in itself kind of plays a big part. But at the same time, I noticed that there's this phenomenon where you wake up and you look at a clock and it's 3 o'clock, especially when people are having some sort of low-level infestations or even hauntings they haven't identified yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of that is sort of like a red flag warning. It might even be, you know, something. Not so much the time, because you got to figure daylight saving time is going to throw the clock off. And demons don't go, well, let's see, what is it? Is it fall back, spring forward? You know, it's not time yet. I don't think they, you know, it's not how it works. So,
yeah.
I mean, they could care less about what Benjamin Franklin made up. So that significant time, you probably to pay attention to the hours between 2 and 4, according to the lunar phase.
Uh-huh.
And that if you look at the clock every morning or for 12 months in a year, and it's always 3:15. You might have programmed yourself. There might be a perfectly logical, or, you know, natural reason for it. It might be a relative's spirit, you know, your guardian angel, something trying to warn you that you have a dark spirit hovering around you during those hours. And you look at that clock, sort of the symbol. The symbol is a warning symbol. Knock, 3 knocks on the wall, kind of a symbolic entrance on the headboard. If it's working towards kind of a more of a personal oppression.
Uh-huh.
And so the number 3 comes up a lot anyway. And, you know, it's usually not a good thing, you know, whenever you have the number 3 showing up a lot in haunting, as opposed to the number 6 or 666, you know, as we're expected, you know, from stories and stuff, huh?
Mm-hmm. So, more or less, though, at the end of the day, I mean, it is a real thing.
That's fascinating, because I really have heard.
And it's very reliable.
I really have heard between, like, 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. is the times that Mansfield becomes, like, the place to, you know, that's when you really want to have your battery. Of course, by that time, my batteries were dead, which was stupid of me, but, you know, I mean, I was excited. I wanted to get, you know, things recorded, so it was my fault. But 1 and 4 is the time, and that makes complete sense that... That coincides. I mean, that just adds meat, you know, or an example to what you just said, Ken. I mean, it's just amazing.
We don't have any. There's no. And I've asked, you know, some of our favorites out there, you know, John and Lorraine and others, because I just always wanted an opinion, you know, because since I heard people thinking, hey, you know, I'll contact my dead uncle Earl at 3 a.m. and I'll be more likely to get him. No. You know, a demonic spirit is a bully. They'll push its way through on a Ouija board, say, hey, I don't care. You're not talking on this thing, Uncle Earl. I am, and I'm going to pretend to be you. That's the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we don't try to contact spirits of lost loved ones at 3 and get more responses. You can talk to your uncle and aunt, you know, during the daytime, and it won't make a difference. You know, if they're there, they're there. And if they need to talk to you, they'll find a way. But doing it at 3 a.m., having a seance, is just suicide because the big dark bullies are the ones that are going to answer you most often.
Well, let's talk more about that. Let's talk more about that after the break, too, because we were starting to really get into the cusp of this. And, let's take a breather here. Kenneth deals
have
with
this.
Yeah, have a drink. Chill back. Smoke if you got it.
I love ice cold water in the refrigerator filter.
Oh, that sounds so yummy right now. Let's take a quick break here. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
And I'm Doug.
And I'm Bonnie.
And we're going to go into some paranormal news with Bonnie Vent. That's what we're going to do right now. That's what this break is
about. Oh, that sounds awesome.
So you're a friend of mine, Bonnie Vent, doing her paranormal news featured here on Ghostly Talk. Check it out, guys.
Ghostly Talk!
The goal of the demonic is death. Plain and simple, it is death.
All of a sudden, he gets slapped in the face and he flies against the wall. And his hands are disappeared across the face.
It's very scary here. Everything about it is scary. The wood in the steel, our face is very short.
It was escalating to where objects started moving.
This is a war that we're fighting. What you're talking about does not think in human terms. It is from another time and place.
Demonology Today. Class is now in session.
Featuring Kenneth Deal, Alan Glassell, and Deborah Johnson.
Thursday, 7 to 8 p.m. Central, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern. Only on the I Am Haunted Radio Network.
Welcome to Paranormal News on Ghostly Talk Radio. Paranormal News is produced by Genesis Creations Entertainment. I'm your host, Bonnie Vent. Our first story comes from Jim Hill. The Haunted Mansion in Orlando is getting a new spiel. Walt Disney Imagineering has paid for two LA-based acting coaches to go to Orlando, who then walked the mansion cast members through the new spiel. Imagineering's goal here wasn't to stifle cast members' creativity, but rather to make sure that from here in, Magic Kingdom's guests will receive a consistent level of performance whenever they visit the mansion. Of course, recognizing that the Haunted Mansion's maid and butler might get bored if they have to perform the same dialogue over and over again, they prepped a script that actually gives the cast members some options. According to the new Haunted Mansion spiel and show narration, cast members will have a variety of lines to choose from in any given situation. Take, for example, if they're dealing with guests who are standing outside of the attraction, eager to enter the foyer, to entertain these folks till the group that's already inside makes their way into the portrait gallery, mansion staffers can say, "Please wait, your time will come. Please wait, we're preparing your final arrangements." And then when it's time for this next group of guests to enter the foyer, Imagineering staff writers want cast members to open the mansion's front doors and say, "We've been expecting you. The master has been dying to meet you." And once it's time for the same group of guests to move from the foyer into the portrait gallery, here's what they now want the butlers and maids to say. "The master will see you now. Please kindly step to the dead center of the room." Mind you, according to what the acting coaches told the cast members, it's okay if they put a somewhat sinister spin on each line of dialogue that the maids and butlers say, just as long as, on the surface anyway, they still appear to be polite. By stressing politeness over being frightening, Disney's looking to rein in those cast members who for years now have been going out of their way to deliberately frighten the guests, which made that first trip to the Haunted Mansion a particularly unpleasant memory for some Disney World younger visitors. More importantly, the parents. According to Variety, Universal has a 6-year partnership with Hasbro, manufacturer of the Ouija board since 1966. Films like Witchboard and the most recently Paranormal Activity have used the board to infuse frights into their plots. Universal Studios and Michael Bay's Platinum Dunes are at work with Hasbro for a feature film centering around the infamous board game. Hasbro tapped writer David Birnbaum to pen the script before partnering with Universal. Plot details are being shrouded in secrecy at the moment. Andrew Form and Brad Fuller will produce. Wisteria Lane has survived tornadoes, catfights, and now raging infernos. An ABC representative from the hit series Desperate Housewives told E! News that there is no damage to Wisteria Lane from Sunday morning's massive blaze at Universal Studios' back lot, despite earlier rumors. The show's infamous neighborhood is housed on the property. If you're a fan of classic TV, this is also where the Munsters and the Cleavers lived back in the 60s. However, CBS Ghost Whisperer starring Jennifer Love Hewitt may not have fared as well. A press executive for the studio told E! News, preliminary reports say just two exterior sets were damaged. Melinda's antique shop is in the same square as the one used in Back to the Future. They haven't received the full report yet, but do not think the damage is extensive enough to delay production on the show. Neither Universal City Walk nor theme park were damaged, but the park was shut down for a day. At least 400 firefighters were called in to fight at times 100-foot-high flames, which broke out at 4:45 a.m. and tore through a soundstage and several buildings and famous movie sets. The King Kong exhibit, New York and New England streetscapes, the iconic Back to the Future set, including the clock tower, were extensively damaged, as was the studio's television video archive. Four firefighters and a sheriff's deputy were also injured, although not severely. You have to wonder if the Ouija board project had anything to do with their bad luck. For more information on these stories, please go to www.sdparanormal.com and the Paranormal News feed page. Don't forget, sign up for a free subscription to Paranormal News. Thanks for joining us today on Paranormal News. If you'd like to sponsor or advertise on Paranormal News, please send us an email at parax.news@aol.com. You can listen to Paranormal News on Ghostly Talk Radio at www.ghostlytalk.com. Please check out their other fine shows. Or you can join us at paranormalnews.mypodcast.com. Until next time, I'm your host, Bonnie Vent.
You are invoking the spirits to help you, but the forces they represent are so sinister and powerful, you shall be a toy in their hands.
Demons.
Mu-ha-ha-ha-ha.
Thanks for that callback, Doug. I like that.
I thought that would be awesome. Yeah.
Quite not as hilarious as we're making it out to be. Not at all.
No.
Very serious.
Absolutely serious.
Very serious. And I want to get to the meat of this. I really do. And we do have some questions, other things we want to discuss, Ken. And the one I thought was really, really interesting was, you know, what are the goals of demons once the person that they're targeting, I guess, becomes possessed. I mean, what really? That's a very interesting question to ask. Because what are they doing? What's the deal? Why do they have to do this? What is the motivation? What is the goal of why once the person is possessed by a demon?
Okay. Well, I'll just say first that there's a few reasons that are kind of primary, and then you branch off from there.
Okay.
But one of them is like puppeteering. It's to manipulate the person to do their bidding. Sometimes, you know, like there's blackouts, sort of like a werewolf scenario where you wake up, you don't even remember where you were, and
yeah.
You got blood on your hands.
Ooh.
You know, or something like that. If you were used as a puppet to murder, take other people's lives, and that's one of the main objectives of a demonic spirit is to take lives, if there's an idea that they're going to be able to take the soul of that person, it's sort of their antlers, like the hunter.
Uh-huh.
And this may happen too with the individual. Depends on if the individual is, fighting back or, should they try to cash in their chips now. For example, like the little girl in The Exorcist, which they use, as a boy. Sometimes you don't get none of that type of behavior at all until it's the last stand. It's the final fight. And there's two reasons for that. Number one, it's been confronted, or provoked, such as when it's in the face of a priest. It knows it's going to have to put up a fight to keep from being expelled. It's not going to go quietly. And it's going to try to take the life of the person who it is inhabiting, especially when the person is not really someone that they're going to easily be able to puppeteer or manipulate because by nature they're good and for some reason they found a way in.
Uh-huh.
So they're going to have the person vomit everything they eat, as you know, not always split pea soup, and try to cut themselves, and you've heard these cases where they've taken glasses and they broke them and they tried to slit their own wrists and those type of things.
Uh-huh.
Or, and I think the actual exorcist case, they pulled a bed spring out, slashed the priest's face and tried to cut themselves up, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And so, death. That's one of the main goals, but the manipulation part of it is they can be used for years, on some low-level things. They're like a hitman for the mafia, would-be, or a patsy, manipulative, a henchman, those kind of things. Depends on how well the collaboration is going. You can be possessed, and then if you're collaborating and totally going along with it, they won't fight back with you by making your head spin around and trying to kill you. There's a sort of an appeasement or understanding there, but you'll be doing their dirty work for a while, and just like the old mafia stories, as soon as they don't have any use for you anymore, too much, time to get rid of you, and then you'll take a spill in your car off the side of the road into a ditch. Something simple looks like an accident, suicide, which is more common. So there's a lot of people who had this type of level of manifestation in their life or, attachment. It might have been, again, as an attachment. It just turns into destructive habits that take their life eventually when they're no longer of use, So death is the ultimate goal. Death of the person's body and then the soul, trying to claim the soul. Sounds kind of cliche, but, there's so many intricate things along the way that make that happen. And trying to get the person that they are manipulating or puppeteering to affect so many lives on different levels. Even if it seems like it's going to be on a positive level first, if the ultimate undoing, is the big picture, and it'll always make itself known sooner or later.
But these folks who get possessed, these folks who do, a dark entity, a demon would be able to get into, they're not necessarily bad people, you had said, and otherwise strong, but there's something about it, and they work their way in, and they do. But these are normal, everyday people, like people you are in front of or behind you in the grocery store, people who are getting gas at the next pump over, people who are, and yet they're in this living hell. And do they all know it, or do they, do they not realize it until it's too late? I mean, how does it work?
Oh, I think sometimes it's both. Huh? They have that, it's kind of like when you realize you might have cancer, but you're afraid to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
They feel that spiritual turmoil. So, like, themselves, they don't notice themselves changing, like when the alcoholic doesn't realize he's an alcoholic, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the more there's time to go over a period of time, like 2 years and so forth, the more it has time to settle in. It's so gradual, they don't notice anything. They don't even notice changes in their own personality. But they might have a realization moment where they lose their temper and they go off the top, kind of like an Andre Yates thing, but not that bad, where you just actually snap and you get sort of like a step in possession where it takes the helm for a while and says, this is where I step, this is my domain, I know how to run this job.
and tries to get you to do these things. And a lot of good people can be affected more on a notable level because we don't know that to be their nature. But when there's a there's kind of an unholy communion or whatever you might refer to it as, like Dahmer, and they work quietly for years and they seem like a great neighbor and they're doing all this stuff, you know, really cleverly behind the scenes to hide themselves from this public society. And when someone stumbles across that, they have these bodies in their house, you know, working under plumbing or something. You know, so, you know, and like, remember Emily Rose, the movie? And it's good to make references to movies because people can identify with it.
Yeah, yeah. And the Exorcism of Emily Rose.
The Orthodox Catholic churches and so forth have that idea of the victim soul. And, you know, Emily Rose is, you know, she just did something, I guess. I guess we don't know the full extent of the story unless you read the book or go over the case. It might have gave it opportunity to, you know, inhabit her over a period of time. And it could have been something relatively innocent, kind of like some of these cases that you read, you know, in the past where the spirit of a little boy or, you know, a teenage boy trying to manipulate a teenage girl, saying that, hey, I used to be this, you know, hot 17-year-old, you know, driving this fancy sports car, James Dean look-alike, you know, and they try to get the person to get on the Ouija board every night, and it's just a demonic pretending to be that to draw her into the drama. And, uh-huh. and she's opening herself up to the spirit. And she's not, but she broke that main rule of giving an invitation, you know, that we had a free will to make that sort of choice. And then so you get good people. And this is what they say partly what happens to the person, the boy in The Exorcist, that and some, I think some incest or something came into the picture too, with the aunt. But, we more notably noticed the ones that were people that don't seem to be that type, and they just sort of get hit with it because they become a victim. Mm-hmm. It's like cancer, you know, that suddenly you have cancer.
Well, and that isn't, you know, we do know these. Well, my question about this, as far as this behavior is concerned, as you said, you mentioned self-destructive behavior. Obviously, you said that the main reason why this stuff happens is because, you know, it's more or less to do their bidding. But wouldn't you think that people who are just straight up self-destructive, you know, they're not really out, you know, hurting anybody else, but they're only really hurting themselves. Do you think that would be kind of tied up in that same, like, kind of category, too? I mean,
I think it goes hand in hand. I think it's, you can look at it from either perspective. It's like, which one causes the other one? Is the, you know, demonic oppression or attachment cause the psychological or behavior or social dysfunction of that nature, or is it the other way around? Is that kind of dysfunctional thing draw that? Yeah, I think it happens both ways, that they go hand in hand. It's sort of like depression. Does depression cause, increases in serotonin, or does the lack of, or increase in serotonin cause depression? You know, gone over that before, too. You know, it seems to be true on both sides, but, you know, when one is evident, the other one's there, too. We just don't know what caused the other one. You have to go back to the psychological profile, which plays a huge part in this thing. This is why you should have always a psychologist when you're dealing with client cases that is ready to analyze the people. If nothing else, maybe they can figure out there's some truth not being told in the case. You know, and someone just trying to come up with a story to sell a book or to manipulate and waste your time.
And do you see that? I mean, well, you mentioned it, so we got to run with it. Do you see that in this? I mean, you know, in ghost hunting, we know it's happening more and more nowadays. But in demonology, is it the same thing?
Yeah, and then they have more guidebooks now. So they go in there and they follow, you know, the ear markings and stuff like that. But they always flip up somehow or another. That's why it's good whenever you have someone who's really used to these cases. And, you know, I have to get someone who's a truth detector outright, you know, with discernment, which is the ability to be able to, you know, perceive the truth, sort of a, you know, kind of a supernatural gift, you know, that most people don't have, especially psychic mediums on a majority of a level. It's a separate gift. It's not the same as being able to see ghosts or anything like that. You know, the ghost can, this is off topic a little bit.
That's all right.
The ghost can pretend to be any kind of spirit at once and even give you a warm, fuzzy feeling, like, you know, a deceased relative you used to love to hang out with. And it could be a demonic spirit the whole time, unless you have discernment and you can see through the disguise with all your six senses. And so the ability to be able to tell the truth in a case, you know, is more and more getting to be. And you don't have it. You just can't go in, hey, you got discernment? Hey, join my team. No, it doesn't work that way. We just kind of use channel logic, you know, to you can, whenever you have someone who really is familiar with these types of cases, you know, such as myself, for example, you know, that you can kind of see the holes in her story. It's the, and the police officer thing, I can really understand why, oh, we have some groups out there, ex-police officers, this is how they can probably play a part better when you get the interviewing going on here, and I heard Tony Spirit talk about that too, that you can feel that from them because you're used to interviewing suspects, that they have the body signals and those kind of earmarkings on the case that something is rotten in Denmark.
Uh-huh.
If you have a psychologist, you can better profile the person even more. Is this the type of person? Is a sociopath or something? Am I make it up? You know what I mean? Someone who actually has enough training or a, you know, an ability to be able to perceive these types of things. Yeah, and there's a lot of it. A lot of attention seekers and so forth, too. Not just the people who are in for the money.
Yeah, well, okay. So we can concur on that one. We'll just move on. It's obviously, I mean, we've talked about demonology on the show, and this is the first year we've kind of dedicated to it. But,
yeah.
You know, I think you mentioned this, Doug, too.
Well, like, I noticed that a lot of people are putting demonologists on their cards, and every demonologist that I know says that everybody has always told them, don't identify yourself as a demonologist. Because
I just don't know why. I guess it's because most people shouldn't do it.
Right. Well, that's
and
the thing.
And here's the irony of it all is, you know, Nathan, he's very, very well qualified and diverse in the subject. And he went right down to theology and his history and all of that. And then yet he kind of refrains from it because he doesn't want to be attacked. I just say, hey, bring it on. I don't care.
Mm-hmm, right.
You know, there's enough people out there that make the name bad for everybody, and they should be challenged on it because it's a dangerous notion to bring someone in there who, you know, deals on this level and then can manipulate people. Now, you know, I'll go as far as to say that this is what Gabriel Amorth also said, the Vatican exorcist. It is relatively silly to kind of scrutinize cases of, you know, in his case he was referring to possessions, but it's the same thing for supposed demonic haunts, that if you go through there and you take Catholic solutions in there, you know, referring from that faith or Orthodox, you know, close enough, and you go in there and you do all these things, you know, I mean, if you don't do something stupid, like, remember I used to make fun of on the old show, having a gallon of sea salt?
Yeah.
Fill about a gallon of bucket Sally Brown sea salt. That, you know, that none of those are, you know, part of, you know, church rituals or things that go along with that thing. That's a preventative thing. You put it across the crest threshold. You don't take a whole gallon, throw it around the house and have the salt either way. You know what that would do to your carpet.
Yeah, right. Right.
So, you know, when they do dumb stuff like that, or they stink your house up, they won't go away for years, or they set your house on fire accidentally with a sage stick. You know, I mean, that's different. But most of the time, doing a blessing on a house, the only danger you're going to get out of it is when you're an unqualified specialist of, you know, extreme haunts or demonic, you know, or demonologists, you know, whatever the case may be, and you go in there and you underestimate the haunting as a harmless ghost, and then you have someone do a light blessing and you just piss it off by doing an unintentional religious provocation, which is what the exorcists do and Ed Warren used to do to get the demons to reveal themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically picking a fight with them. When you start taking these things that have a profound effect on them, new positive symbols and words and so forth, holy water, relics of saints, that kind of thing. And that's when it's really dangerous, is when people do it too soon without actually evaluating the situation.
Yeah.
You know,
that's kicking the mean dog Spence or shaking the beehive.
Bonnie, what?
I have a question from the chat room.
Okay.
Vance wants to know how you're able to determine that the entities are demons and not something else.
Well, there's a checklist, but it's not something you can put. I'm going to try to put something in the book, just a basic one, but there's just too many points. You remember in the beginning of the show when we were talking about renovations and I said,
yeah,
well, there's just too many things that are variables in there. Well, the good thing is the earmarkings are very evident for demonic spirits, that we don't find humans masquerading to be demons. We find demons masquerading to be humans enough that, but they leave a footprint or an earmarking that it's evident that we give the, that's something to think about. I'll write it on my mental checklist, leaning towards demonic. And then we look at the environment of the household. We look at the psychological state of the people, and all these things kind of add up. But it's not. It's sort of like a mental checklist. And the 3 a.m. thing and the significance of the number 3 is evident. And, you know, even books on the shelf, their lifestyles, their habits, you know, are there any self-destructive habits and that sort of stuff. The black shadows without a shapeless form black shadows showing up at 3 a.m. in the morning is a red flag. It's not a definite indicator, but it would mean I wouldn't want to look a lot deeper. You know, like when a doctor takes the second opinion test. Well, unfortunately, it doesn't cost them money, you know, to refer, you know, and get opinions from other people and so forth that might be nearby. But there's a lot of times that I can tell a lot just by a phone conversation. And I figure that's kind of how my, you know, your good mechanics do, too. And I'm a computer repair guy also. And I got to the point where I had to watch by talking to people on the phone because I wasn't getting any business because I was giving them all the answer they needed on the phone. You know, I hear the symptoms of it. It's a diagnostic and, you know, and identifying it and then providing it a solution. And that's sort of what, you know, I take that kind of background and apply that to these type of problem hauntings.
Yeah.
Also, now, yeah, there's a determination factor there, and we just have to sort of like weave them all together, and then, yeah, we still have to consider the truthful side of it, and not to mention the psychological. It's, it helps when you have someone who's not living by themselves or living with two retired people who sort of have Alzheimer's, and that happens, or, you know, people that are on disability, you know, for find out why they're on disability. And it's disappointing, it's disturbing, it's a number of things. And but you have to check that stuff out first and, you know, explain it to them if you have to, give them a disclaimer form or whatever. But it seems more and more we have to sort of try to weed the first part out so that we're not made to be a fool of. And this is what the Catholic Church has been putting up with for years, and this is why probably they closed the door and they lengthened the red tape to the point where I'm not even relying on them anymore. It's almost impossible. You know, I mean, it takes a year to get an annulment done through the church. It's when they nullify your previous marriage for, you know, finding grounds. Well, you know, I mean, how can you wait that long when you're being oppressed by, you know, demonic spirits, or you're being tossed around the room? You know, I mean, that's enough time to give a person, you know, enough oppression to be driven to suicide.
Yeah.
So we go to other denominations. So scrutinizing is good. Scrutinizing can be bad.
Well, we only have a couple minutes here, Ken.
Yeah.
So I really want. There's another thing I thought was really interesting here. I wanted to get out, but we're not going to have much time to talk about it. And it was the very last thing we had on the list, and it was the differences between demonization, attachments, or possession. And these are three different things, correct?
Yeah, they just play. They're used. I'm going to have to write a blog on it. And I wrote something called, you know, like what's in a name, and it's about saying demons' names, you know, and so forth, and what the name of demons are.
Yeah.
Demons are. And I'm going to write another one. It's like what's in a word. The definitions are way out of whack. Remember they say poltergeist is the PK energy surrounding around a child going through puberty. No, it isn't. It's noisy ghosts. They intended that idea to be spirits, not someone's imagination or some PK energy, which isn't a spirit. No one's using the right definition. Demonization, they use exorcism when they have these preachers with the fat fingers and the microphones, as I wrote about in a different blogs, and they're doing, they're casting out the demon of smoking, the demon of overeating, and that's demonization. That's what everybody has. They work on a level of temptation. You know, sometimes they can get to a level of, you know, like oppression, and we don't even realize it. When that's when they become destructive habits.
Yeah.
You know, like the drug addict, you know, who's crashing his car and stuff. But, you know, for the most part, it's just considered demonization. It's sort of like it's not necessarily an attachment. It's just living your normal spiritual life, and then you appease, you know, these spirits on a temptation level by giving into the temptation, and you become kind of addicted to eating it. I mean, not so much addicted, but they're trying to get you more and more addicted to affect your health.
Temptation,
you know?
And things like that. I shouldn't have that piece of chocolate cake, but God, would it taste so good.
Not mentioning chocolate cake.
An attachment is different because an attachment is kind of like how it is with you. You know, that you can go to a place and get an attachment, and it doesn't mean possession. It means that it can lead to possession eventually, but it's just sort of like, you know, you got it stuck on your back like Velcro. And it could step up your demonization. If you already have a habit of, you know, drinking too much or something like that, and it's starting to affect your life, it may get worse because of the attachment, because they work together like the Borg on the Star Trek, you know, the collective. So, you know, and then possession is a goal. It's a stage, a manifestation stage, where an attachment, you know, you could say that can turn into infestation. An attachment's more like a curse. That you can get a curse or an attachment by, you know, just crossing the wrong graveside or on unholy ground. side of practice of the dark arts, you know, crossing certain seals and that sort of stuff, and
yeah.
you know, and so that can create an attachment, and even you know, on that's another one of a lot of variables, a lot of ways that you know get attachments and stuff, and people are afraid that when they go to hauntings such as Mansfield that they can bring them back. Yeah, you can. But that's why you do protection prayers before you enter, and you do binding prayers when you leave, just to make sure that, kind of like going into in and out of the space shuttle, that you get your purge, you know, that decontaminates you.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever those science fiction movies are, and you always, you know, you go in that tube and you get this purging,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of like cleanse yourself. You know, you're kind of cleansing yourself after you leave the place, and you're putting on some armor, or you're putting on that suit, you know, that... that bio suit when you go in. It's uh-huh. invisible. And that's how we prevent attachments, and they can't stick on you because it's like being a greased pig, you know. You know, which you hope. That all varies, of course, depending on, you know, the person's spirit and that sort of thing. Those variables always play.
Man, well, I gotta say, this has been like heavy. I mean,
yeah.
we covered. I know we didn't cover nearly half of what we wanted to cover, but I think what we did cover, we really got into it and got a lot of information out there.
It's timely. I mean,
yeah.
because we
totally
were
timely.
Really
yeah,
just talking about a lot of the stuff. Your website,
yes.
is www.catholicdemonologist.com. All one word, all run together.
Yes, Kenneth Deal is the man here. Thank you, Kenneth, for stepping in.
You're welcome.
And stepping up and helping us out in a time of need. We are gratefully indebted to you for eternity.
Thanks for having me on.
No, we had a good time. Did you enjoy yourself?
Yeah, I like talking shop. You know?
Good, good, good.
It's been a while because I've taken a break from my show so I can get some things done.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said, things happen for a reason. I'm glad we could have you on. Hang on for 1 second, Ken. Don't leave us just yet, okay?
Okay.
All right, okay. coming up here, guys.
Yeah. Father Daniel Gargiulo.
Yes.
We'll be talking with him. More demonology coming up.
Yeah, we're going to be talking more about our exorcisms, whatever.
But this is a really heavy show before we take a week off and go to the...
Well, we got to lay it on thick so people don't get too
well,
mad
at us. Well,
that's
true,
you know?
That's true.
All right, yeah. Well, let's take a quick break here. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
And I'm Doug.
And I'm Bonnie.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Miss a live broadcast? Feel free to download it direct from the on-demand archives at ghostlytalk.com.